Production. Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody, and this is Lynn, and we will be talking Twilight Zone for the next 30 minutes or as long as it takes, and today we are reviewing The Big Tall Wish. And before we begin, I would like to turn this over to Robert, our co-host, for a clip, the opening narration of this clip, this episode, I should say. So over to you, Robert.
And now, Mr. Serling.
In this corner of the universe, a prize fighter named Boley Jackson, 183 pounds and an hour and a half away from a comeback at St. Nick's Arena. Mr. Boley Jackson, by the standards of his profession, is an aging, over-the-hill relic of what was, and who now sees a reflection of a man who has left too many pieces of his youth in too many stadiums for too many years, before too many screaming people. Mr. Boley Jackson, who might do well to look for some gentle magic in the hard-surfaced glass that stares back at him.
Back to you, Lynn.
Well, thank you for that, Robert. Okay, well, today we are reviewing The Big Tall Wish, which was a story written by Rod Serling and produced by the great Buck Houghton or Houghton. I was never sure how his name was pronounced, but I guess it's Houghton or Houghton. Anyway, the story starts out with an aging, worn-out, and well-scarred former boxer named Boley Jackson looking at his image in the mirror, and he seems just a little bit nervous and just a little bit uncertain because he's a few hours away from going back into the boxing ring to try and make a comeback in his boxing career. Now, there's a little boy named Henry sitting on Boley's bed, and little Henry idolizes Boley, who is somewhat of a surrogate father or big brother to him. So Boley proceeds to tell Henry about his scars and his broken nose and the years when he got them and the names of the fighters who gave them to him. Henry tells Boley how much he believes in him and then tells him that he's going to make a big, tall wish that night that Boley wins the fight without getting hurt. Boley smiles at him and takes the boy's faith and belief with a grain of salt. He starts out of the apartment building and speaks with Henry's mother, who tells Boley that Henry's constantly wishing for things, and sometimes they come true. Well, Boley skeptically tells her that children must someday come to the realization that there is no magic and there are no wishes. So he leaves the building, and the people on the street are wishing him good luck. Next scene, he's at the arena, and he's being prepped for the fight, and the man he hired to be either his manager or promoter for the fight that night is a contemptible man who proceeds to spout arrogant and snide remarks to Boley about how he's a washed-up and worn-out fighter. Boley demands that this guy put out a cigar. The two get into an argument, and when Boley attempts to punch him, he misses and slams his fist into the concrete wall, thereby breaking his hand. He insists on going into the ring anyway. The crowd is cheering and making a ruckus during the fight while Boley is fighting and trying to win, and they do this until Boley is knocked out. Little Henry is watching at home on the television and runs to the front of the TV screen and wishes for Boley to get back up and win. Well, for a few moments, everything freezes, and Boley does get up and wins the fight. Boley heads home, and everyone is congratulating him. He goes up to the rooftop to revel in his comeback with Henry, but Henry seems distraught. Boley doesn't understand until Henry tells him that he only won because of his wish for him. Boley doesn't believe Henry, and Henry tells him that if he doesn't believe, it won't come true. Boley refuses to believe. Next thing we know, Boley is back on the mat, knocked out, and he lost the fight, as he was originally intended to do. All of a sudden, Boley finds himself back in reality, and the neighbors are telling him he should have done this, and he should have done that. He's jolted back to reality. He goes into the apartment building and tells Henry's mother that he'd like to see Henry. She says, sure. He goes into his room, and Henry tells Bully that he wished very hard, but it wasn't enough, and he isn't going to wish anymore because he's getting too old to wish. Bully tells Henry that maybe there is such a thing as magic and wishes coming true, but just not enough people who believe. He tells Henry he'll go to a hockey game tomorrow, and that's how it ends. Well, as sweet and as endearing as this episode was, in my opinion, it was nowhere close to a Twilight Zone episode. It was, as I said in my original review of it, more suited for a Hallmark Hall of Fame or Lifetime Channel story. This episode did not give me the slightest shiver, shudder, or eerie feeling. It was a little boy wishing that his hero would win a fight, and it came true, but the hero couldn't believe, so he lost in the end. Nothing zone-like about that. The saving grace for me to this story were excellent performances by Ivan Dixon as Bully and Stephen Puri as Henry. Very few child actors really impressed me, but Stephen Puri, he did, and Ivan Dixon is a fantastic actor. That's why I gave this episode a 2 rating for average, but if not for them, it would have garnered a poor rating from me. Ivan Dixon and that child were what saved this episode for me. So I'm going to turn this over to Kelly for her review.
Okay. Well, I actually really liked this episode a lot. In fact, and this was the first time I'd ever seen it. I'd never seen it on any of the marathons or anything like that. So this was the very first time I had seen it. And I actually gave it a classic rating, and here are the reasons why. I liked the acting. I thought the interaction between Ivan Dixon and Stephen Puri was very good. I mean, I really did believe their relationship. He was clearly a surrogate father to him, as you said, or possibly, you know, like a big brother. And one of the things that I read in Mark Zykri's book that what was unique about this episode was that this was an episode that easily could have had an all white cast in it, but in this particular episode it was done with an all black cast, and it was actually a very unusual for that time period, and nobody was being portrayed as a criminal or anything like that. It was just regular people just living their lives, and really the only bad person in that episode was, it seemed, I think, the white guy who he tried to hit in that episode.
Promoter.
So you had that, and then you had the fight scene. Obviously, that, you know, Rod Serling had a very limited budget, so you couldn't film this like a Rocky movie, obviously. But what struck me about the fight scene was that we saw Bully, he hit the wall, and so this all really became about his hand. And I was impressed with the camera work in this episode when they started zooming in on people's hands. And in fact, when I first saw it and we had this stop motion, I thought initially there was something wrong with my DVD player. I thought, oh no, something's wrong, but no, then it started. And I thought that was actually very unique, the way they portrayed Bully's wish, or not Bully's, but the little boy's wish coming true, Henry. And I just thought it was endearing. I mean, when I watch a Twilight Zone episode, I don't necessarily have to feel creeped out or scared or anything like that. Sometimes I enjoy these feel-good episodes. And, you know, and in the end, I thought it was kind of a nice little ending where he said, you know, maybe the problem is just that there aren't enough people who believe. And, you know, that's not really a bad thing to say at the end of an episode, that, you know, it doesn't hurt to believe in miracles because, you know, sometimes miracles do happen. And I enjoyed it. So, and I'm sure Ken absolutely hated it. So why don't you tell us why you hated it, Ken?
It's not that I hate The Twilight Zone, because it's one of my favorite television programs of all time. It's just that this series is a science fiction series, and it's supposed to be strange and unusual, and a feel-good story is not going to work for me. You remember how the series started off, where is everybody? You know, you had that odd feeling, you know, the guy's walking around town and nobody's around. And that's, I think, how the series is presented to people, the unusual and the strange. Then you get to an episode like The Lonely, and you see the ending there where it's just so weird, the robot, you know, and the guy on the planet, the asteroid, and his heart's broken, but you're just left hanging there, what if? And then time enough at last, you get that feeling. What happens to Bemis after his glasses break and he's there in the middle of nothingness and can't read his books? You have that strange, odd, eerie feeling. You know, you keep going on in the series, The Hitchhiker, Mirror Image, Monsters Due on Maple Street. You're getting these episodes. It's science fiction, and you get that uneasy feeling as you're watching. People are like all over. Sam Conrad at the end is in the zoo. What happens next? And that's what attracts me to this series. If I want to watch Superman save some little girls, you know, off the building, I'll turn to Superman. But as far as The Big Tall Wish, I gave it a poor rating. That's a 1. I didn't give it a lousy rating. I don't know why. I'll agree with Ivan Dixon. He's a good character. He's a good actor. But I think I know what happened with Rod Serling and the production crew on this episode. They filmed it. They canned it. But on the CBS studios and on the Paramount lot, it got lost in the shuffle. It was supposed to be appear on Little House on the Prairie, not on the Twilight Zone. So I think that's what happened here. And Robert, I'm going to turn it over to you, but I got to ask you a question. If you're watching a marathon and you're in the middle of nowhere and this episode shows up and you've seen it before, are you going to sit through it again and watch it again, Robert?
Nah, probably not. If you read my review, you know my feelings on this episode. I mean, one good thing is at least it never got a 0. So that's a good thing. At least it does have some merit to it, but it's no Raging Bull. And even Raging Bull was black and white when it was filmed, so.
Robert, I mean, there will be people listening to this podcast that may not have read your review, so I think you need to be a bit more forthcoming than that.
Well, that's what I'm going to do.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's okay, Dave. That's part of my review is what I wrote. So basically, what I wrote was just to focus on the child itself. Bully Jackson, what I kind of call him Mr. Emo. And if some people don't know what emo means, it's kind of a short for emotion. And the best thing I found for it was emotional, trying to come off as deep, intelligent, and full of angst. Someone who is emo tries hard to act like he is so deep and full emotion that's killing him inside. He can't smile. He can't get through a day without deep pain. And that's pretty much what I wrote. I wrote that instead of destroying people, you know, being a boxer, he destroyed the little kid's imagination. And I wrote that I felt sorry for the kid more than I did the boxer in this episode. You know, the kid, this is his idol, okay? We all have our idols that we see when we're young, and we never think about the feet of clay that our idols have until we see them fall. And this is the same situation with this story. That, you know, you have someone like Bully Jackson crush the dreams of a little kid, and as a consolation prize, we'll go to a hockey match. And you get kind of a picture, an idea of what this kid will be like when he grows up. Because if he's looking at him, he might become a boxer someday as well. And unfortunately carry that same angst that he did. But basically that's what I talked about, was just basically, sure, you know, he lost his dreams, he lost his imagination, but why put this on the kid himself too? Why crush his dreams? Why do away with him imagination, because you want to make this kid an adult. Is basically, look at my life, look what happened to me, so I'm going to make you like me. So, and the thing is, hey, you're going to go out on top. You know you ain't going to do another fight. You know this is the last one you're going to do. Go out on top. Shoot, he had a little belief in him when he came home. He had his doubts, but he thought he won. But then the kid, instead of just smiling, that's all he had to do, was just smile and not say anything. He blurts it out, I made this big tall wish and I dreamed, and then they got this confrontation going back for it. Believe, I can't believe. And then, at first he won the fight, the tables are turned, and then now his opponent wins.
Yeah, well, that's what I agree. Maybe the kid should have just left it alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I give this a 2 out of 5. It was an average story, nowhere
that's
near classic, because of just this poor kid. What happened to this kid? Bully should have went along with what the kid dreamed for him, go out a winner, and left it. Instead, now he's going to be spoken about by people as, well, he could have won it, but no, he didn't, or... And then we put our images on other people, on the kids. And then the kids grew up to idolize what the person is to them. And this kind of gives you, like I said, a snapshot of what's going to happen to this kid when he grows up. But that was just pretty much in a nutshell what I wrote. And I looked at the view of the kid more than the boxer. So I'm going to pass this on to Bobby.
Okay, I have to say that I pretty much agree with Robert and with Lynn more than with anybody. I really wanted to like this story more than I did. It's the kind of story that has a lot of potential, but there's something odd about it. I have to agree with Lynn. There's something strange about it. It doesn't really feel like the Twilight Zone. I'm not sure exactly why. There are other stories also that kind of turn me off when they don't seem to belong in this series. One thing that annoys me about successful series is when they try to do something different, and they try to step outside of their success and do a different kind of story. For instance, there are several Twilight Zone episodes we have not discussed yet that are comic relief, and I don't like that at all. I don't think it belongs in the series, and it doesn't work for me. So this is also the kind of story that just doesn't, I don't know, there's something oddball about it that just turns me off. The best thing about it, as everybody's already said, is the acting. And Ivan Dixon was really an outstanding actor. And I went to IMDb and looked up his career and his biography. And it's a strange thing, because he was friends with and started in the business around the same time that Sidney Poitier started in the business. But Poitier became a better-known actor than he did and had better success when they're both about the same. They acted together both on Broadway and in the movie version of A Raisin in the Sun, a really outstanding film. And he was great in that, and he was. And I can say one thing, it's nice to see him in this and Al of Hogan's Heroes, where he was truly, his career was really trashed. I mean, he had no business being.
Bobby, was Ivan Dixon in Raisin in the Sun?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He was I think he was played Poitier's brother in the story,
and
was both in the Broadway version and in the movie version.
Oh,
and that's always been one of my favorite movies. It's a great movie, and he's a great actor. He also did a lot of work behind the scenes for many years, trying to get better parts for black actors. And he became a director after his acting career faded. He became a director, and I think, if I remember correctly, I don't have it in front of me, he directed over 100 episodes of various TV series over the years. So he went on to great success, but, the idea of him being in Hogan's Heroes, a really insipid sitcom, is really appalling. So whatever problems I have with this story, I'm glad to see him doing this, rather than just being the token black guy in a series with a bunch of white guys. So I will say that about it, but somehow it doesn't fit. And I have to agree with Robert. It does seem unfair to kind of bring this kid down and tell him, oh, no, you can't wish for something in real life. Real life is brutal, and don't think you're going to get away with this again. That doesn't seem to be a nice thing to do to him.
Plus, I just keep wondering why the kid had to tell him the truth. You know, I mean, he idolizes his body, especially for people in sports.
I agree
with
that.
Let's just say you won the World Series. You were the winning pitcher in the seventh game. And you just did something phenomenal. Maybe you pitched a perfect game. And you're flying high. Everybody loves you. And somebody comes up to you and says, you know what? You didn't really pitch a perfect game. I went to a witch doctor or somebody. And I pulled some strings and you won the game. Nobody wants to hear that. You know, sports people want to know that their ability won. So you're really going to kill this guy if you say to him, I hate to tell you this, but you were really on the canvas, and it was only because of me that you ended up being the winner. That's the last thing in the world anybody would want to hear, and that's why he takes it so badly. So I think the kid should have shut up and said nothing and simply been happy that his guy won. And
his hero won, yeah. Yeah,
and why? I mean, not only did he kill the kid's hopes, who thinks now that if you wish hard enough, you can have something happen, but the kid killed his dreams because he thinks that he just won the fight and he didn't. So I agree with Robert's review, and also I like the things you said on our message board yesterday at the Twilight Zone group about the fact that it's really kind of a sad story because nobody gets anything out of it. At the end of it, it's just kind of depressing. It's just kind of sad.
Yeah, so we'll go to the hockey game and emo that for you, kid. How terrible the hockey players are.
Exactly.
But now,
right.
Wait a minute, though. I think you're missing, though, something that Boley said, though. But remember, Boley said at the end, maybe the problem is that there just aren't enough people who believe. I mean,
yeah, but you don't say that to the kid after you just told the kid that you can't do that. He already killed his dreams, and now he's going to backtrack and go, well, you know what, maybe there should be more people like you. But if I'm a little kid, he's already convinced me that wishing things can't really happen. He's already killed it. He's already hurt him.
He said he's going to grow up now.
Yeah. Well, I think it is kind of sad. I would like it to be a little more upbeat than that. I don't know what it really proves, but it is. It's not. I gave it a 2.5 in the poll. The acting is really, really good, and it's an emotional story. But again, I have to agree with Lynn and with Ken. It's just not exactly what I expect. The Twilight Zone doesn't always have to be science fiction. It doesn't have to be, on other planets and things like that. They can do a story. And there are other stories that we haven't touched yet that are
this. It should be a little eerie. There should be some eeriness about it. And there was no eeriness about it at all.
Well, yeah, it's too mundane. It's too everyday life.
It was too much like something that you would see on the Hallmark Hall of Fame, like this heartwarming, endearing, sweet story.
Yeah, you can see movies.
Twilight Zone.
You can see the movies like this around the clock on the Lifetime channel on cable.
Exactly.
They're all day and all night.
Exactly.
If you like this story, that's about it. All right, let's turn it over to Dave and see what he thinks.
Yeah, Dave.
Oh, well, I'll be different, if you don't mind.
Before you start, did you want to review how you felt about Execution since you weren't able to make it on the last show?
Yeah, go ahead. Go
your
ahead.
Radio.
Well, that's
well,
fine.
Go
ahead.
For it.
Well, if you don't mind, I'd rather talk about this one first.
Because
I can answer some of the points that have been raised. Well, not
answer,
okay, give my view. Well, first of all, I'm going to paraphrase all that I say with, I can understand that it's not a typical Twilight Zone. So in that sense, you could argue, it can't get a top rating and it can fail on that. But on the other hand, I thought this was a nice, gentle story. One of the issues I have with some of the Twilight Zones is, they're trying to film a whole book in 20-odd minutes and the story seems to have to be cut to the bone to fit the time slot that it airs in. Because as we all know, although it airs in a half-hour series, the actual episode itself is probably only about 21 minutes long. So this, I thought, was a gentle story, and because of that, I thought, it's a simple story, but it's not, as quite a few of the speakers have already said. There's actually quite a number of levels to this. First of all, the guy's washed up, and a great acting, as I think most people have mentioned, and also people have mentioned that, it was a lead acting with black actors and actresses, and that was quite, forward-thinking, really, for its time. But the thing is that what my interpretation of it is, first of all, the people have said, well, why did the boy tell him? No, you didn't, Bowler, you didn't. because the boy's wish before the fight was he didn't want his hero hurt anymore. That was what he wished. He wished that he wasn't hurt anymore. But in actual fact, what happened was that there was like this switcheroo where they swapped places on the canvas. That's why the boy told him, I think, because although he wanted to idolise this man, he was now a fallen hero. He'd not protected him from being hurt. What he'd done had caused him to win. And this, the boxer was saying that he'd won when the little boy knew that without him helping him, he wouldn't have. So the boy was a little bit, the shine had come off his hero. He was a bit of a tarnished hero in that sense. The other thing is that that bit you mentioned at the end, Bobby, about why did the chap say, perhaps there's just not enough of us to believe. I think that line was obviously directed at us, the audience, that, there will be no magical endings if the audience doesn't believe in them. But the other thing is that although I think, well, this is a fairly small plot, this boy, the man's wished his life away and now he's washed out. The boy's had a hero who is now lost that hero worship and he's lost his childhood and he's got to grow up as an adult. But all of them have missed the real dream. Because I assume that's some widowed mother with a son. The boy idolises him as a father. The his mother and him seem to have a nice rapport as they talk at the bottom of the stairs. I wondered why there was no closure in the sense that although that dream was lost in terms of his fighting, that there was another dream that they could come together as a family. Now, whether you can argue, well, it's not the Twilight Zone if you're having happy endings in that sense, but I think there was quite a lot of levels that could have been explored. But basically, I take on board what people say. It was quite a thin plot for a Twilight Zone, and it didn't have the usual real twist or beguiling storyline. But I thought it was a little gentle plot that perhaps counterpoints some of the other stories that I've had in other weeks. I thought it worked reasonably well, and the acting was quite good. And the little chap who was his sideman in the boxing ring, he's a real character actor, isn't he? Walter Burke, I think. I've seen him in hundreds of cowboys and detectives and different things. Real character actor there. And it was nice to see him in the load. I can't say what he's been in, but I'm sure there's plenty of detective shows that he's been in. So, a gentle story, not really a typical Twilight Zone, but I thought nonetheless it was handled reasonably well. There was obviously a sign, as has been said, that it could have done with a little bit more budget spending on it. The other thing that was quite surprised is they didn't go down the obvious route, did they? The person who was not likeable was this chap who bet against him. But they got out of the cliche that one would have expected with a boxing match, is that, where they tell him he's got to throw the boxing match. Because usually, so many stories I've seen where, he gets his chance at the title and said, right, we've laid bets on you, you've got to fall in the third round. And then he's got that sort of dilemma as whether he keeps his... perhaps the boy's looking up to him and he wants to win, but they're saying, he has to lose because they'll do something to the boy's mother or something. So they sidestepped all that issue. A middle-of-the-road story, I would think, but I think it did have some merits and some highlights. I don't know if anybody wants to come back on anything I've said before I mention last week's show.
Okay, and I just want to welcome Victoria. Thank you, Victoria Warrior, for joining us.
Before you go on, Dave, I just got a point I want to bring up. So you're saying that it's okay for Mr. Emo here to destroy this kid and through the whole episode, not even say something positive at the end. This guy did not say one thing positive to help this kid. So it's okay for him to, bash and put himself onto, imprint himself onto that kid. So when he grows up, he could be like him.
You're right. But that's the story of this guy all along. He's a loser. I mean, his chance comes along and really he fails it because he can't believe. He's got almost a ready-made family there that if he would stop pursuing this boxing dream that he's long since passed, he just doesn't see the opportunity and it's clouded his judgment. And you're quite right. Instead of letting the kid live on and say, you know, kid, you know, dreams may be all right for you, but they're not for me. He disillusions the poor boy. So that is a sad and wistful end to it, yeah.
I agree.
But actually, could I just say that, you know, everybody's saying how this guy destroys this little boy, but by the same token, basically what you initially saw was an alternative reality for what happened, because you had the first thing where Henry wished for Bully to not get hurt, and so he ends up winning the fight. He comes home, and Henry confesses all, and he says, you just got to believe, and Bully says, no, I can't believe. So then he's thrust back into the ring, and he loses the fight. Well, technically, none of that other stuff happened. I mean, I got the impression that when Bully came back, Bully had no memory of what had happened before, and Henry had no memory of what happened before. Henry was just devastated that he made a wish for Bully, and it didn't come true. And
yeah.
Bully says, well, maybe the problem is not enough people believe. You know, and so I really didn't see that he had really devastated the kid that much, because the kid didn't remember the conversation, and neither did Bully. Nobody remembered that Bully won. So,
excellent points. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really think the kid is going to need as much therapy as Bob and Robert seem to think that he's going to need.
If it would have added a flashback scene of Bully's life, just a minor thing, to see what he faced, maybe a 4 to 5 minute segment, maybe that would have helped. But, you know, come on, you have to agree this much, Kelly, that, you know, you don't want the boy to follow your image. You don't want him to end up like you. It's something that you should try to discourage, and it looks like he's not discouraging it.
Well, I don't think Henry was necessarily going to grow up to be a fighter. I never once got that impression that Henry wanted to be a fighter when he grew up. I mean, I don't think we ever saw an instance where they discussed what Henry wanted to do when he grew up.
So I think he just idolized. He just idolized,
yeah, he idolized
as
him,
a father and a brother.
Yeah, okay, he idolized him, but that doesn't necessarily mean he wanted to grow up to be a fighter like
exactly.
He was. I mean, you can
exactly.
idolize somebody and admire them for something that they do, but that doesn't automatically mean you're gonna strive to be a fighter like he was. I mean, if anything, the fact that he saw that Bully did not become rich and famous being a prize fighter, that maybe that would make him think that, you know, Bully's a good person, but this is obviously not something I would want to do. You know, maybe
right.
I'd like to go do something
right.
else. So
I just don't think
Henry is going to be in need of as much therapy as everybody seems to think he's going to need.
No. And Bowley wasn't trying to disabuse the boy of dreaming, bring himself to believe enough, and it was just a side effect that it had on the boy. When Bobby's unmuted, of course, if he talks straight away, then we won't get that background.
Sorry, Bobby.
Oh, that's okay.
Victoria,
yeah.
Is there anything you wanted to say, Victoria? You can just type it in if you have anything to say on chat.
While she does that, do you want me to just mention the execution?
Yeah, while I'm waiting for Victoria,
yeah, go ahead.
I would just like to say one more thing about this episode.
Bobby,
yeah?
And that is that I've only watched it twice in the past 50 years. That says plenty about it right there.
Yeah,
well, Bobby,
amazing.
do you take the point of what's been said, or do you agree or disagree with what's been mentioned?
No, I stand by what I said. I agree with you, actually. Mm. I don't. I think it's a sad story. I'm taking anything positive away from it, actually.
Right. Well, if I can talk about the execution, I mean, this story, the execution, the one that you talked last week, that wasn't here, is in many ways the opposite of this one, in as much as it was a very complex story in a way, and they've almost had to shoehorn it into the time that they had for it, like we've mentioned on a couple of the other stories in the past. I mean, I particularly like the actor who played the baddie, the cowboy character that is being hung right at the beginning.
Albert Zombie,
yeah, right.
Who plays Joe Caswell. And, of course, when he's brought, without paraphrasing the whole story again, but when he's brought through this time machine right at the moment of just about to be hung by this scientist, Professor Mannion, I mean... The only points I would say is, first of all, it seems to be a big cast event. When the lad's running around in the streets, frightened by all the horseless carriages and all the sounds and noises, I thought that was excellent. And it probably would be very true. I would imagine somebody's brought up in the, you know, in the West, and the occasional mooing of sheep and the coyotes at night, the constant raucous nature of a big city, you know, in full flow of you know, cars and taxis and so on, would absolutely be like a vision of hell, I would have thought. And you know, he's grasping at his head, but I did think that the professor was slightly naive, saying to what he suddenly realized was a cold-blooded murderer, that I'm going to send you back. I mean, how he thought he was going to do that to this big strapping man and not see that he was putting himself into some sort of danger. And the other thing that seemed rather strange was the current day opportunist buddy that came in to rob the place. It did seem a little bit amazing that he was able to overcome this man who's worked with his hands as a cowboy. That did seem a little bit unbelieving, but the story I thought was quite well, but I did feel as though it was shoehorned into a rather tight schedule. Where the one we were talking about today, I bet the whole script was on 2 pages.
Well, now if you remember, you said earlier, you know, did we like any of the? Do we like the Twilight? Of course, we love the Twilight Zone. That's why we do the show. And if you notice, most of us gave this episode a good rating. I mean, Albert Sami was fabulous. I mean, he was he's perfect for that role. The flaws I found were the fact that the professor, you know, how could he possibly take down Albert Sami? He should have known right from the start he wasn't going to be able to take him down.
Yeah.
He'd say, oh, well, I'm going to put you back in there. I'm going to send you back and be hung. And he thought he was going to get away with that? Come on. I mean,
go quietly,
talk about a death wish. You know, and he got it. He got his death wish. He got killed. You know, and it was just crazy. And what was the other thing that bothered me? Oh, yeah, and when the little guy at the end came in, this little robber comes in at the end, who's also like half the size of Sami, and he manages to take Sami down by wrapping the cord around his neck. You know, and of course, I know that as Kelly and I have both agreed, you know, you can't choke somebody in 5 seconds. But, you know, they don't have that much time to work with. But still, you know, a guy the size of Albert Sami should have been able to take that little guy down. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Hello,
listening. I was going to say, for those people listening, I mean, that was because of some of the comments that were made before you started the recording. But I would think I preferred that. I would give them that one more 3 out of 5, 3.5 out of 5.
That's what I give, 3 out of 5.
And this one today, probably, maybe a 3, actually, because I think, although it's a very simple plot, you could actually dissect it and look at it in many different ways. As I said before, the real story wasn't told at all. There was a family in the making, but of course that is not really where the Twilight Zone takes us.
Well, there's nothing wrong with experimenting and trying different things. Doctor Who's done that for years, and so has the Twilight Zone. I just felt that this was kind of a piece, maybe out of a full... It's like a piece out of a movie, out of a box. Maybe this feels like a segment out of Raging Bull. You don't get the whole pitch, you only get a portion. And, you know, like I said, there's only so much you can do with 22 to 25 minutes per episode. Yeah.
Well, we have a new person who came in a little late, but Zior. Hi, Zior. Do you have anything that you want to say about this particular episode? He says they were all so good. Yes, they were. Well, most of them were. Actually, Victoria said that. I'm sorry. Zior. You're right, Victoria. Most of them were good. Zior, do you have anything to say? You can just type it into the chat.
I mean, there's some more good episodes that will be coming up. I mean, we're getting close to the end of the first season on the reviews here. I think we got, what episode was this now, number-wise?
I think this is... what is it, Bobby?
I don't know. I want the list in front of me.
Big Tall Wish? Let me check.
Because, I mean, there's 36 episodes to this season.
I've got our award-winning book in front of me.
27.
It's episode 27. But I need to ask Kelly a question.
What, Ken?
You gave this a 5.
That's so kind of friendly, isn't it? That's so kind of friendly.
Kelly, are you going to, if this comes up again, are you going to watch this episode again? Because that's the test for me. Will I watch it again?
I just told you I've only watched it twice in 50 years.
He was asking me the question, Bob.
All right, I'll hang up. I'll see y'all in 2 weeks.
I wouldn't mind watching it again. I mean, I was a big fan of Little House on the Prairie. I watched those shows many times over and over, Ken. So, yes, I could watch this show again.
Okay.
Kelly, can you repeat what you were saying there real quick, please?
I said, Ken asked me if I'm comparing this to other episodes we've given classic ratings to, and I said no. Because when I look at an episode and I give it a rating, I am rating that episode. I do not care what happened in any episode that happened before it. I do not care what happens in any episode after it. I am looking at this episode, and I am ranking it on the things that I look for in an episode. That's how I do my ratings. I don't care what happened in Time Enough at Last. I'm looking at this episode.
And that's great. I respect your opinion. I think it's great.
The thing is to be consistent. If that's your consistent way of doing it, then that works, I would think.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Does somebody want something from me? What? I have nothing to say. This has gotten more discussion than it could possibly deserve as it is.
Well, Zior, I'm sorry.
I'm going to go back to mowing. I got to finish mowing my lawn. I'll talk with y'all later.
Oh, yeah. Zior, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You have like this lawnmower sound coming behind you, and it's like we probably wouldn't even be able to hear you. But we would hope that you would tune in for the next show, which will be in 2 weeks. And which show is that, Bobby?
Maybe this would be a good time to close it.
Yeah, I think so. Well, Bobby left.
It is episode 28, A Nice Place to Visit, one of my favorites with Sebastian Cabot.
Okay.
Look forward to that one.
Zior, try to come in 2 weeks for A Nice Place to Visit. And hopefully we'll get the sound fixed by then. And thank you. Okay,
I need somebody to come over and mow my lawn for me. Oh, I live in an apartment building, so they do that.
Well, I will be in 3 months, so I'm going from a house to an apartment. So, okay. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us, Dave and Victoria and everyone who's been there today. I thank you all for joining us, and we will see you in 2 weeks when we do A Nice Place to Visit. So good night, and enjoy your weekend, everybody.